All right, welcome everybody to the January 26th Hyperledger Technical Oversight Committee call. As you are all aware, two things that we must abide by on the call. The first is the antitrust policy notice that is currently displayed on the screen. And the second is our code of conduct, which is linked in the agenda. For announcements today, we have the standard Hyperledger Dev Weekly Developer Newsletter that goes out each Friday. If you have something that you would like to reach the hundreds of Hyperledger developers that we have in the community, please leave a comment on the wiki page that is linked in the agenda. Any other announcements that anybody has for today? Okay, I will take that as a no. So for quarterly reports, we still have the outstanding Q4 Hyperledger URSA report. We have the Sawtooth report that's coming in today. I did get reached out to from the Sawtooth folks. They are currently working on a release, and then they will get to the report probably later today. So we should expect to see that coming in. Check your inboxes or your task list to see when that does show up. And then Stephen was ahead of schedule, I guess. It got us the Hyperledger Areas report ahead of schedule. So I saw that a number of people have had the opportunity to review that already. If you haven't, that one is waiting for your review. But for those who have had a chance, are there any questions on the Hyperledger Areas report that anybody has? Okay, looks like we just have some updates for the data from the insights report that needs to come in on that. So we'll expect that to get updated here probably shortly. I'm just laughing. I'm watching the participants come in. We now have two people who are Hyperledger project folks. So I just think it's amusing. Okay. Anyway, next thing that we have on the agenda here is to talk about the move the project reports to GitHub. So I think we're probably ready to make a decision on this today. I did see a number of people who have agreed to this on the chat and have provided some input as to where they think these reports should be hosted. Any questions or comments that exist on this that we need to talk about in the meeting? Any concerns that anybody has they'd like to bring up? I know last week the concern was whether or not we would have any objections from people who submit project reports. Didn't see any that showed up on the chat. But any other comments or concerns that we have with this?
So Tracy, this is Arno. I have no problem. I just think that obviously we will have to update the documentation. So, I'm thankful for Brian made the effort to elaborate on the process being proposed, which he didn't have initially. I think this all sounds good, but we need to capture that somewhere else than in that issue eventually, right?
Correct. That is correct. We'll have to make sure that we redirect people to where they need to go to create those project reports in the future. Probably on the wiki, we'll put a link there directly. And then I think there's a few other places that we talk about project reports that we should consider either updating and or moving from the wiki. I think there was a document that we had wrote 2 years ago, maybe, about the value of these project reports and why we create them. That could potentially be moved over to GitHub as well as just a kind of introduction for this particular section on the on the TOC site. But yeah, we'll definitely have to go through and see if there's any other places that we'll have to update.
So otherwise, we had talked about reaching out to the projects to ask the maintainers who typically fill out those reports how they felt about it, but we haven't heard back from anybody, have we?
So I did reach out on the maintainers discussion channel. The only thing that I saw was a few people who said, yeah, this looks good, and a few thumbs ups, if you will, there. I didn't see anybody who objected to the request.
So I just, you know, it'll be interesting to see how many people submit the next report on the wiki and didn't get the memo changing and using GitHub instead.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
It will be a data point on how effective we are at reaching out to maintainers in the project.
All right, any other comments or concerns? Okay, no other comments, no other concerns. Did we want to make a motion for moving the project reports to GitHub?
Yeah, this is Marcus speaking. Just one question. So what will happen with the existing project reports, which we have on the wiki? Do we also migrate them to GitHub to have everything in a single place?
That's my plan. I've already exported them as HTML, and I use Pandoc to convert them to Markdown. Those will come over time, mostly because the HTML export doesn't preserve the voting status. So I need to, the checkbox status. So my plan is to move those over.
Right. So that most probably will also mean that we will violate the proposed protocol in order to basically review and approve on GitHub all the existing project updates, I guess.
Yeah, so I think all the existing project updates, you know, they've already obviously been approved by previous TOCs or TSCs, as the case may be. And so, yeah, I don't think we'll necessarily need to have everybody in this TOC approve those before we can get those merged over. I think that was your question, right, Marcus?
Yes.
Arno?
So, I mean, if there's a way to transfer the old stuff, I mean, the GitHub, I think, is great, but can we just leave with having a link from GitHub to the wiki and say, for all the reports, go check that out over there?
What I would like to do is mitigate this durability point too, right? So we've lost founding documents, and I want to get them into Git.
Okay.
I don't plan on deleting them from the wiki, but I just want to get them somewhere version controlled that's not the wiki.
Okay, that's fine, thanks.
All right, any other comments, concerns, questions before we go to a motion?
So I'll move.
All right, Arno, thank you. Do we have a second?
A second.
All right, thanks, Arun. All right. So, Rai, do you want to just take us through a objection, abstain, approve?
Sure. All those who object, say nay. All those who abstain, say abstain. All those who approve, say aye.
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 The motion before the TOC passes by voice vote.
All right. Thanks, Rye. All right. So for our next agenda item, we have a discussion about some proposed task forces. So just to bring up to speed those who may not have been on the TOC last year, we had last year moved to running task forces during the second half of the TOC call, with the first half being used for discussion and decisions. Potentially, depending on the agenda, we did tend to go beyond the half an hour mark, but the intention really is to run task forces so that we're getting some work done by the TOC. And last year, I think we had four different task forces that we ran during the TOC. And then a number of those task forces also had like off-cycle meetings where they met and got some work done outside of the TOC calls. So I think the intention is to continue that practice here. We did have quite a lot of suggestions and goals that people had in our first TOC meeting this year, where we can possibly create some task forces. I did try to create a list of those. I did have some people add to that list earlier in the week. And so you can see the full list here of proposed task forces that were based on both our goals, discussions, and other things that are ongoing in the community. So I first wanted to start with a conversation about whether or not these look like the right set of task forces. I don't think we can obviously do all of them initially, but I think we can start with some of them. And then as those close up, we can bring others on to the list. But I do want to see if, first of all, if there are others that we should be adding to this list. Bobby?
Yeah, I was looking at the list all week and kind of thinking and trying to get a higher view looking down on these task forces. And I kind of think the list we have, when you start with the project best practices, I think out of that task force would flow the badging, the documentation, and possibly security, so that you would have the best practices and then possibly get badges for creating correct documentation guidelines. Again, the documentation would be a task force in and of itself, with the suggestions for the community to use. You know, the best practices would be decided and by task force or whatever, but there would be a place where people would be able to go to see that everything for each project is badged or, you know, awarded the proper, badging is the lack of better word. And I think that those three kind of can be tied together into one. And then I have comments on onboarding for later, but that's just for those three right there. For me, it just seems like they are kind of in the same family. Comments?
Yeah, Bobby, I agree with you. I think that project best practices is a very huge task force. And I do think we probably have to break it down into some sub task forces, because I think like the best practices for automated pipelines might fall into project best practices as well, right? And so, you know, I guess the question is, do we start with trying to figure out what all the best practices are that we want the projects to focus on and then create some task forces around those? Or do we work on what might be the smaller task forces around documentation and automated pipelines, and those feed up into the project best practices task force at a later point? And I mean, I understand, I think I have the same sort of question in my mind. And so I don't know which way is the best, right? Is it breaking down the project best practices, or is it building up the project best practices, if you will. Arno?
So for those of us who've been around for a while, you probably remember that the way we define task forces was something along the lines of something that is, you know, that has a very fairly narrow scope with a clear mission that is expected to be delivered in a fairly bounded timeline, right? And so for that reason, I do think it's better to have smaller scopes and like topics. I do think that, you know, best practices is indeed too broad, and or it would have to be something that, as you were saying, the goal of which it becomes like spawning off other smaller task forces that are more narrowly focused. And experience shows that it's much more, you get a lot more momentum when you have a fairly well-defined narrow scope that you can execute on and deliver quickly, because people get, you know, you do get a boost out of, you know, the satisfaction of having achieved something. And then people are encouraged to participate in more task forces because you get a sense of achievement, rather than having some kind of really long-winded task force that just never seemed to end, and it becomes much less obvious what you're achieving, and it can become demotivating.
Yeah, I agree. I put a link into the task force guide that we had created in the chat for this meeting. And in that document, it does talk about being, the task forces should last no longer than 6 months as far as time to complete. They have to have the introduction and of what the task force is and the tasks that are to be completed and the deliverables or the work product, right? So I agree that we definitely want to make these things smaller as far as what it is that we're trying to accomplish with each of these task forces. And if we were to decide that the project best practices task force was something that we wanted to start with, then it would definitely be a case where I think we start with a list, right? That's the initial task that needs to be done, a list of what we believe these best practices are that we would include there. And Dave, I know you have your hand up. You were also the one to recommend that in the goal. So I would appreciate your thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, so my intention with that one was not to boil the ocean into all project best practices under that task force, but to pull together some of the existing information that's in various places so that it's like a one-stop shopping place where people can see everything, and then also have a structure such that we can link to other things as they come in with these other task forces. So I do see from that perspective, it's kind of a focus thing just to pull together a structure of how we want to expose the stuff to the outside world. But then, yeah, there'll be a lot of open items that the other task forces will complete over time.
All right, thanks, Dave. And Arno, I guess back to your point, right, about smaller task forces, that's also why the security has two separate items that are listed there. I think Evenhart had been talking about trying to make those, you know, discrete tasks that could be accomplished in the short time frame that we would want from a task force. So completely agree that we want things that are smaller in nature. All right, if we could go back to the meeting record so that people can take a look at these. See if there's other ones that they think might be something that we want to include or possibly, you know, have, if anybody has questions on kind of what we think these task forces might be. Obviously, that will be up to the chair to really define that. But, you know, love to have any additional thoughts of other task forces that we might want to focus on short term. John?
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to comment on a little bit of, you know, where the Learning Materials Development Working Group is looking to go this year. And so we've talked about focusing on the onboarding task force, which is, I think, the fifth item down there. And really being able to get people who are interested in the Hyperledger ecosystem engaged and being either contributors or maintainers. And then also looking at, as part of that, delivering some educational content that would be a regular series of meetups that can be promoted by Hyperledger that we can, you know, continue to go through and provide educational or instructional content. And also, you know, just look at continuing to focus on the career fair that we've had for now 2 years in a row and to make sure that that's on track for 2023 as well. So that would be my only comments about task force this year.
So John, I guess I have a question. So the onboarding, the education pieces, those are distinct and separate task forces that you are thinking about doing in the Learning Materials Working Group?
Yes. And so the great thing is Arun is on the call here. You know, he's done a great job of working on the starthere.hyperledger.org and, you know, going ahead and collaborating with Arun and that team and really continuing to build that out. Also providing some resources that are accessed a lot on the hyperledger.org website so people know, you know, really what's popular content and, you know, making sure it's really a good onboarding experience. And if there are people that come to the community and want to get engaged, you know, being able to really point them in the right direction and get them going quickly is the thing. And then I've also been conferring with Jim Sullivan around doing these instructional content workshops and, you know, being able to have more of, you know, the library that we can offer to the Hyperledger community around these instructional workshops and including them in the Hyperledger YouTube channel.
All right. Bobby?
Hi, first I want to just put it out there that John has stepped up to be the chair of the Learning Materials Working Group, and congratulations, and I'm so happy he's done that. So hats off to John for that. I was thinking with the new task force for the TOC, that documentation and onboarding become one of those. I would gladly take a leadership role in that and work with John and Arun to make that happen. The onboarding definitely has to be parsed out a little bit. I think you have onboarding citizens, onboarding developers, onboarding SIG chairs, onboarding maintainers, and onboarding TOC members. So there's definitely a lot of onboarding that needs to be talked about and determined. So again, those two, John and I have, you know, worked well together, and we would gladly keep moving with those. So if anybody has any suggestions or information that they would like to help us, and I think the badging process might come from some of the work in those two task forces.
Okay, that's really interesting, Bobby. I think I wanted to see if maybe I can edit this list because you had onboarding SIG chairs, onboarding TOC members, onboarding
maintainers,
onboarding
developers.
Okay.
And citizens.
What are citizens?
People like me who my first year here just was involved in calls, going to meetups, scheduling meetups, creating meetups. You know, we're not developed. We weren't, well, I'm a developer, but, you know, just people who want to be in the community. Yeah, community members is a good word.
Okay, too. Great. Okay. okay, any other ones that I should include here? Okay. So I wanted to capture that because I do think as we look at these task forces, we should, as Arno mentioned, right, make sure that these are distinct and small enough to be covered in the 6-month time period that we have set up for task forces. So I appreciate you kind of expanding those, if you will. David?
Thanks, Tracy. Plus one, I just wanted to plus one what both Bobby and John said. I totally agree that onboarding is a broad topic, so it's nice that we're clarifying what we're talking about. And you're right, and the way we onboard one of those groups is going to be different from the way we onboard another, so that makes sense to me. I also think the task force structure is going to be a better format for the work that people in the learning materials working group want to do than perhaps the working group model itself. So I think this will be an interesting experience to see if the task force brings more people into those efforts. I also think it's great to try to combine those. I mean, I think we've already mentioned it, but you know, for example, the work that Arun and the India chapter has done around Start Here has been great, and the work the Learning Materials Working Group has been doing has been great too, but those have been separate efforts. You know, I think it's much better to have one combined effort at bringing new people into the community than having multiple ones. So I'm really excited that people seem interested in the onboarding task force, and then I'd be happy to support all that.
All right, thanks, David. Yeah, I think so we talked about kind of the project best practices. Stephen, you had suggested the automated best practices for the automated pipelines as a goal to try and capture. So I did include that here. Hopefully that one is self-explanatory to people. But Stephen, did you just want to remind people of what you were thinking when you brought that up as a goal?
Sure. We're doing a lot on in the various projects we have on what I consider sort of reinventing and rediscovering what's the best way to produce artifacts, where to produce them, and so on. It also goes back to what Arnaud talked about last week, which is, you know, handling dependencies and things like that, looking for, you know, what tools we're using for making sure our artifacts we're producing are safe. So going through that, we had a huge effort on Indy to basically redo what had been done, and it, you know, it was pretty extensive, but it was very manual and difficult to use, and bringing it up to current best practices. I think it's there, and applying those would be very helpful. So that's sort of the idea of that one.
Okay, Dave, I added these two bullet points to the project best practices. I think those were what you had suggested as what your intention was to gather the current best practices and determine gaps that might exist. Did I capture that correctly, Dave?
That looks good, yeah.
Okay, great. So the badging life cycle one that exists here is one that we have talked about multiple times in the last, well, I don't know, probably ever since I started joining POC calls, where we're trying to figure out how people can best determine the status of projects. We've talked about potentially coming up with a number of different badges that people can make sure are current and accurate. We've talked about, you know, is our life cycle the correct life cycle? Do we need to do anything to change kind of the status of where projects are? Do we need to have some sort of yearly review cycle or that sort of thing? And so I think this is a task force that I added specifically because the governing board had a discussion in December regarding this. And so I think it's something that they're sending back to us to take another look at and see if we can get it right this year or not. So that's what that one is all about. The documentation task force, I think there was some comments in our initial meeting about the one, where we store our documentation, and two, the format of our documentation and making them more consistent across the board. And so I think that is what that particular task force is all about. Does anybody have any additional items that they remember from the documentation? Bobby?
Yeah, I worked with that with one of the community members, Ben, and he did a great job. We just really don't know where to put it. It was more suggestions. And again, I know that it needs to be updated and needs to be looked at, but there was great momentum on that just to make it easier for maintainers and developers to transfer their GitHub stuff into not a uniform, but an accepted Hyperledger format with a lot of leeway for them to pick, you know, their own styles and stuff, but just to give them some basic guidelines. So I think that that was one piece of the documentation task force. And then the other, where I think there might be another opportunity is with the documentation, almost like a Hyperledger library for people to go and, you know, not research, but look up and research actually. Information that is available to the community.
Okay. And Stephen?
I was going to add that a bunch of the documentation challenge is the tooling involved in publishing a decent, putting the documentation into a format accessible to the set of onboarding people that are listed below. And so common tooling for doing that. And just being able to spin up a repo and have, you know, all of these things like the best practices for automated pipelines, but also documentation there. So it's more a checklist and the ideas are already there of how to do it. Readmes, to me, readmes and markdown files are, so 2018, and we have to get up to 2023, and that means actually publishing these out to a more accessible, in a more accessible way.
Okay. Ry?
One thing that we could do is GitHub does have template repos. So it would be, it's possible to have a, you know, have a repo that's a template that contains all of that. And, you know, it might be overkill in some cases because the first commit would be someone from the community immediately removing all the stuff that doesn't matter. I don't have a strong feeling about it, but you know, it is something that's available.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. Mm-hmm. All right. Marcus?
So when I think about documentation, so sometimes, so if I go to some documentations of several projects, so sometimes the scope of the documentation, I think it's not really clear. And maybe it depends on the lack of some guidelines to define, okay, what should be in a good documentation for operators, for end users, for just people who would like to get the gist of a project. But the documentation for a new contributor to a project, a new developer, should maybe look completely different. And so I think there, maybe some guidance on how to define certain scopes or the audience would be helpful.
Okay, great. All right, so moving down here to the supported project. So in the latest version of the charter, we introduced a concept called supported projects. Supported projects are those that have separate technical oversight pursuant to a separate technical charter. And those projects are called supported projects in the charter. One of the things that we need to do is find all of the places where we need to update documentation of how we would deal with a supported project from the technical oversight committee. For example, do we require quarterly reports from supported projects? What do we do when a new project proposal comes in for incubation and we would be reviewing that as far as the project that's coming in, like, is there anything that we have to do to the life cycle documentation, that sort of thing? Who's ever scrolling, it's at the very top in the very first section. It's the very last paragraph of the section. It talks about supported projects. So those are the sorts of things that I was thinking about for that particular task force. It's just understanding what that truly means for us as we now have those as part of the charter and might expect to see some of those projects coming in. It would be good if we have an idea of how we want to handle those before they actually show up. So yeah, that's what that particular task force was intended to represent. And then I think the last two are security task forces. Hart, I don't know if one of you want to talk about these from the perspective of what exactly you were thinking here.
I'm happy to talk. Arno, do you want to talk?
No, it's all right. Go ahead. But Jim has his hand up, so that's why I was pausing.
You go first.
I was still a little puzzled about this concept of this supported project. Maybe someone can give an example.
Yeah, I think the example is, let's say we have a project that already has a brand associated with it, but they want to bring their source space into Hyperledger. They want to basically be whatever project name, a Hyperledger project instead of Hyperledger project name. And this is a supported project. They will have their own technical charter that they will work under. And beyond that, I'm not sure that I can actually give you much more information about how that's going to work within Hyperledger, because we don't have it. And that's why I think this task force is really important, is to really try and understand what would that look like for us as a project comes in. How do we approve that project? What additional steps would need to be taken to make sure that project is remaining healthy? And that there's nothing that we would want to do from a TOC perspective.
So that's like hosting it, but not owning it. Is that the right way to understand it? So the source code will be hosted in Hyperledger repositories, but we don't, Hyperledger doesn't quote unquote own that, the copyright of it or the license of it, like we do with the regular projects.
I believe that's correct. Daniela, any thoughts on that? Any additional ideas you can add beyond what has been said? Or Hart, I don't know if one of you have a thought to add to this.
Can you repeat the question, please? I apologize.
No, that's okay, Daniela. The question is the supported projects, so the projects that are coming in as a Hyperledger project, but are not branded with Hyperledger.
Yep.
They have their own brand. I think the question is, are these projects that we would consider hosted by Hyperledger, but not necessarily owned by Hyperledger, or we're trying to understand them better, I guess, in this context.
Yeah, they would be part of the Hyperledger Foundation. So they would be, governed under the TOC, but have their own project charters if they so do wish, and the same, governance and support, project services, et cetera, that we have today for a Hyperledger XXX project would be applied in the same way.
So what is the key difference?
The key difference is that they don't need to have the name Hyperledger in front of their name. It's a marketing thing more than anything else.
Okay, and Daniela, the fact that it's still governed by TOC, does that mean how they elect maintainers, how that community grows, would still follow?
That's just like today's projects, right? So,
right. Okay.
Exactly the same. as, you know, a Hyperledger Firefly project, the same way that, you know, the maintainers are selected, the processes within that project are selected. It's the same thing. Maintainers are kings here and queens.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Tracy, did that address the question?
Yeah, I think so. Although I still think there's a bit of just confusion about what a separate technical charter truly means. You know, and, you know, is there anything that's going to need to be a concern for this TOC and the sort of processes that we currently have around, you know, would we expect these projects to still report to the TOC? I mean, based on what you said, it sounds like yes. And so maybe there's not really any changes that have to occur here, but I feel like when we looked at the technical charter that was created, I think for the Anon Creds project that I don't know if we got rid of at this point, I just feel like there were some concerns around what was stated in there and the way in which it potentially conflicted with the Hyperledger charter and the TOC processes.
Okay. Hart's got his hand up. I'll let him address that part.
Yeah, Hart.
Yeah, Tracy, you're totally right. That the suggested charter that we thought about using for our non-creds was not workable. But in response to the project charters, like, one thing we want to encourage projects to do is to have more documentation about things like how maintainers are promoted, how releases are handled, you know, what policies, you know, does the project sort of use, all of this stuff that would sort of be in a charter document. So one of the things we want to do is to encourage projects to document and have this. And while this isn't exactly a charter, it is sort of in the same vein and spirit. So we think that if we sort of encourage projects to have stuff like this, it won't be too different from, you know, a supported project having its own charter in the long run. Does that make sense?
Makes sense for me, Hart. I think I get it. Not sure everybody else does, but Jim did it.
Yeah, so maybe last question for me that'll help me. The need for creating this new type of project, is it to allow a rather mature community to come into Hyperledger but maintain their own brand? That was basically why we need this, because sounds like everything is the same.
Yeah, that's one thing. You know, another thing is we've talked to projects that might be interested in coming into the Linux Foundation, but they, you know, they don't have enough, say, you know, funding or whatever to become their own top level project. And, you know, they're related to blockchain, but they're not, you know, specifically blockchain, right? You know, for instance, if you had a project that was, you know, exclusively focused on zero knowledge proofs, right? You know, Hyperledger might be a good home, but you might not want to market that as, you know, specific or exclusive to blockchain, right? Because there are a lot of different other applications. So that's sort of another scenario we were thinking about, in addition to the branding one, which you correctly bring up as an important one.
That helps. Thanks.
All right, so back to the security task forces that are listed here. I don't know who won the fight there. Was it Arno or Hart?
I can talk about it. It's okay. Okay. Although, as a side note, I had a side conversation with Hart, and I think he's suffering from the same how do you call that? Like a challenge that Rai used to have, and you know, I used to encourage Rai to speak up on the TSC calls. He felt like, oh, as a staff member, it wasn't for him to speak up. And I think we have a lot more to gain from having those guys participate actively than not. And so I've been saying the same to Hart since, you know, especially he was a TAC OTSC member, and we benefited from a lot of his participation over the years. And I think it'd be a shame that now, because he's on the staff side, he just becomes quiet all the time. So with that being said, sorry, hard to put you on the spot, but I hope this way, you know, it clears things out. You know, if anybody disagrees with me, but I'd be very surprised, speak up anyway. But so on this very point, the vulnerability disclosure is what I've talked about before, which has to do with, you know, the OpenSSF has published a best practice guide kind of thing that describes pretty in pretty great details the kind of processes open source projects should have in place, the kind of documentation they should have in place to handle vulnerability disclosures, reports from security researchers, for instance, and the process, how you get into the actual dialogue, the communication, the protocol you should follow to handle those reports and the security researchers who, you know, by the way, are not always very easy to deal with. Let's just put it this way. And so this task force is about looking at the very specific aspect of adopting this broadly within Hyperledger, making sure, you know, developing a policy as to what that actually means to implement this across the board for all the project to have that. I don't know if there's any question about this. Otherwise, I can talk about the second one.
Maybe at your urging, I'll jump in here, Arno. You know, as all of you know, or many of you know, Arno is heavily involved with the OpenSSF. And, you know, they have a lot of nice tools. But one thing that we really noticed was that they didn't have, you know, a fantastic template for a vulnerability disclosure process. So what we'd like to do with the task force is to write, you know, default vulnerability disclosure processes for Hyperledger projects that, you know, projects could use. And maybe we have one, maybe we have a couple, but the idea is we would have a default template for vulnerability disclosure processes and says that says something, you know, and the idea is basically do this unless, you know what you're doing and you have good reasons to do otherwise. So, you know, I went to the OpenSSF working group on vulnerability disclosures yesterday. Arno was also there. They don't have this in quite the detail that they want yet, or that we want yet, or they want. And they're actually willing to work with us on this. So if we come back and say, hey, you know, can you help us with this? They've already said they would say yes. And we can push whatever outputs that we have, you know, as examples to the OpenSSF. So, you know, we can sort of be like the, you know, the umbrella project, you know, setting the standard, you know, for this. And, you know, I think this would be a really good collaboration that could help both us and the OpenSSF. You know, and looking ahead, we also want to do something similar for the SIGSTOR stuff, which is the next topic, but I'll stop for now. Are there any sort of questions on this?
Yeah, just I will add on this disclosure thing that you were just talking about. Essentially, the document they publish describes the process and tells you you need to publish your process, but they didn't go as far as actually giving you a template that you can just start from. To say, okay, this is where we're going to publish and maybe we need to make some adjustment. And that's what Hort has been talking about.
Exactly. Thanks for the clarification.
So the last point on the security artifact signing, it has to do with this notion of, you know, a big problem that, you know, we have today is there's all sorts of artifacts, and this is meant to be very inclusive, but it refers to, you know, any kind of piece of software, whether they're container images, whether they are packages, you know, like a Node.js package or something. And we include those with that much verification as to the provenance of those packages. And there is a series of tools now that are being developed to help with the process of first signing those things and then be able to verify those signatures when you're on the consumer side. So since we all produce in the Hyperledger projects artifacts such as container images and binaries, we should get into the process of signing all those artifacts using some of the tools that are now available. They're all open source. They are free to use. There are, you know, infrastructures in place with like servers that are for free to use that we can leverage for that purpose. So I think that's a kind of a low-hanging fruit that we should, that is a best practice that we should definitely start doing, implementing in Hyperledger.
Okay, thanks Arno for that. So now that we understand what all of these different task forces are there others that people think we've missed or that we should potentially also include in our list to prioritize? Art, you're on mute.
I am on mute. Thank you so much. Do you know if we could start jotting down people who are interested in the task forces? It might be a good idea if we, you know, if we keep track of, you know, whoever's suggesting the task force might be an excellent person to lead the task force.
Yeah, so Hart, I think given the timing that we have, just noticing that we're about 5 minutes out from the end of this one, my thought was that we should do similar to what we did last year where we voted to express interest in these to see which ones we might address first as the different task forces that we want to focus on. And then, you know, from there, yes, maybe the right lead is the one who initially suggested it, or somebody else who wants to step up and actually lead that task force. How does that sound?
Great. Sounds like a good plan. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So my intent then would be to, in the TOC channel, create a poll similar to what we did, the poll for where we should put the GitHub project reports. And then before next week, I want everybody to vote. Let's say vote for your top four in what it is that you think is the most interesting and ones that you want to prioritize for the start of this year. And then we'll expect that the other ones we'll revisit in the second half of the year as we move forward. So. Any thoughts or comments on that?
Yeah, Tracy, I mean, does that imply, I mean, when you say vote, people are expressing an interest to participate in those task force as well, right?
Yes, for sure, for sure.
Because if it's just saying, you guys should do that, but don't count on me to do it. We might have things that get voted high and we don't have actually enough people to do it, then it's not very helpful. So.
Would this be better served as issues on the TOC repo? Because we can't really comment on polls.
Sure, we can definitely do that. And I, thumbs up on the issue if you're interested in it.
Yeah, or a comment or whatever. Say, I would like to chair this or something.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely would love to have the people stand up to be chairs. That'd be great. Okay, so then I will create the issues for these. I'll send out a message to the TOC chat and ask you to vote / comment on the ones that you want to participate in. Yep, Rama?
Since the last SGF, been considering creating an interoperability task force, but we have other activities going on in interoperability around the world, including trying for having a working group under the ITF. So can I think about this further and add to this list later, or is this list going to be set in stone now?
No, definitely. If there's ever a task force that anybody thinks is something that we should focus on, we can always add those. We do have that task force process, I think, where it actually suggests creating an issue in the TOC issue tracker. So that's probably a really good way to deal with that.
Sure. Thanks.
Okay. Any other comments or questions before we close out the meeting? Okay. So then with that, we will close out for today. Thank you for the discussion and the information on what each of these task forces should be and the expansion of those task forces as well. So have a great week, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.